D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie, Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you, joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by the incomparable Elliot Friedman, Sportsnet NHL Insider. Elliot is brought to you by Old National Bank. Get old with Old National Bank. Elliot, I'm sure you saw the highlights the other night. The Predators, for the first time in their history, rallied from 4 goals down to defeat the San Jose Sharks 7-5. They've won a season-high 4 games in a row. Are you starting to see the Predators team that you anticipated seeing when the season began?
You know, it was funny. I was watching that game a little bit, and then I changed the channel. And all of a sudden, I started looking at the score on my Sportsnet app, and I was like, oh, I better change it back, because I don't think anybody was expecting that one the way it unfolded. I mean, I think it's hard to say. I mean, I like to see more of it. There's no doubt about that. I try not to overreact to small sample sizes, is what I would say. They're starting to play better. It looks like there's some life. I like the way things are trending. I would like to see them look like as we wake up today, you guys are 10 points out, and there's 5 teams between you and Calgary, which is in the second wild card spot. I'd like to see them give it a run, at least make it interesting. If they make it interesting, I'll be like, okay, that's a good second half of the season.
Speaking of that, Elliot, the Predators do have an opportunity to make it interesting because their schedule has softened up significantly between now and the start of the Four Nations face-off. In a couple of weeks, they play a rematch with the Sharks tonight. They play Anaheim on Saturday. They play Buffalo twice in this stretch, I believe. They play Chicago. They host Vancouver next week. So they do have an opportunity to play teams around them in the standings. I was reading something from our friend Greg Wyszynski earlier today about just the state of the playoff race. And he wrote, quote, "The question, as it relates to the trade deadline, is whether GM Barry Trotz will use the trade deadline to fuel a flicker of playoff hope or get his Predators in a row for next season." How could you see Barry Trotz thread that needle if the Predators continue racking up points?
Well, I think the one thing that I do believe is that jobs are always on the line. If you're Barry Trotz, and you've already made some changes, right? But if you're Barry Trotz, you're not going to be able to sell the same team coming back next year. So between now and either the trade deadline or jumping past that, the draft, the summer, you're going to be making changes. You're not going to come back with the exact same group. You're going to have to do some things here and there. Now, I think, you know, it's been a year of seismic changes. He made some of the biggest acquisitions last year in free agency. I don't know if you can do that every year. So if I was some of maybe the depth players or the, maybe not the core group, but sort of like the support group, which is important, I would be wondering about that. Like last week when I was on, we talked about McCarron. We talked about Sissons. The other thing, too, is I would be, if I was one of your top prospects, and I know you guys have had a lot of injuries in Milwaukee, but I would be sitting there and I would be saying, all right, what can I do here? I've got to be doing things that are going to let the organization know I'm ready for a spot next year. Like, that's the thing I'd be looking at right now. I mean, you know he's looking for a center. You know he's looking around at some of those things. I think that if I was a guy who thought I could make an impact next season, I would be doing everything I could to be showing that, whether I was still in the American League or I was up in the NHL. Those are the guys who have to be looking and saying, all right, that's where the changes could come. Like, I've heard a little bit of McCarron out there. I do think he's a guy who teams like. I think if you're him or you're the Predators, you're sitting there and saying, after March 7th, is he going to be there? I think, you know, now that it looks like the cap is going to go up a bit, I think, you know, not like assistance is a huge number, but you're probably a bit more comfortable with some of the term. If I was him or I was the Predators, I'd be looking and saying, okay, what's my situation going to be? Those are the kinds of things I think you're thinking right now. He's not coming back with the same group. So where are the changes going to be? I think you can look at your roster and kind of figure out what could be on the table here.
And before we get to Derek, one note, Predators and Sharks rematch tonight. Yaroslav Askarov expected to start against the Predators tonight. He did not start the other night here in Nashville, but he is expected to start tonight in San Jose. But Derek Willey, Derek has a question for you related to this subject.
Yeah, I mean, you gave up the boo signs, and I'm sure Predator fans are really interested in this matchup, not because, you know, San Jose is some juggernaut, but because of Askarov and, you know, what we thought of him and what the fan base thought of him during that time. And then obviously the Predators ultimately trading him to the San Jose Sharks. Now, what are you expecting in this matchup in regards to Askarov? And do you think that whatever narrative has been set in this situation, mm-hmm. will it be changed tonight?
No, I don't know if one game is going to change anything, Derek. I got to have to say, and you guys asked me about this last week, I was disappointed Askarov didn't play in Nashville for the pure entertainment of it all. Like, look, the Sharks have to do what they think is right, right? Like, they're purely about what is right for San Jose, and I get that. But I would just say, like, if I was ever good enough to play in the NHL and I returned to the building under those circumstances, I would want that start. Good or bad, I would just want to come out there against my former team. I would, like, that's just me. I would want the harder start. It's, you know, it's going to be interesting. Like, you know, it's weird. You don't often see this kind of back-to-back where a team plays one game, where two teams face each other on Tuesday, then they go 75% of the way across the country and play again on Thursday. Like, that's a weird one. But I would want, and that will make it challenging on its own, but I would want the more uncomfortable start. So I was disappointed from a purely entertainment point of view that he didn't play. I just don't ever say, you know, one game changes everything. Especially not a game like game 45 in the schedule in the middle of January. I think that once you guys signed Yusa Saros and that was the right decision for the Predators, it was only a matter of time before Askarov was going to play somewhere else. Now, Barry Trotz wanted it to happen on his own time. He didn't want it to happen on Askarov's time. But Askarov and his representative, they pushed it across the finish line. And there's always going to be a little bit of hard feeling for that. But at the end of the day, if the Nashville Predators had a choice, 7 years of UC Saros or whatever the other option was going to be, at that time there was only one vote. And that was the right choice. And that was 7 years of Saros.
Now, Elliot, you did mention, hey, listen, the remainder of the season for the Nashville Predators, you want to see them make this interesting. Now, will they ultimately end up making the playoffs? It looks highly unlikely, where they are sitting at this point. But, you know, looking at this team, do you think the people, you know, you included, in the hockey world, is going to look at the Nashville Predators, if they do make this run but still not make it, look at it as a missed opportunity for this franchise, because you assembled a team that you felt can win now. And they started off very slow, and then they seemed to pick it up or they are picking it up. Do you think around the hockey world they would look at it as, man, they had a great opportunity? I'm just talking about this year, that they had a great opportunity based upon the way they played the second half of the season, that if they had gotten it together a little bit sooner, this could have been a really deadly team once they got in the playoffs.
I think unless they make the playoffs, Derek, you're going to look at this season as being disappointing. I just don't think there's any other way to look at it, right? I think the one thing that's important is if you finish strong, you can sell yourself for next year. Like, if the Predators finish the season really poorly, the fan base is going to be looking at it like, okay, it started bad, it ended bad. Like, what is there to like about any of this? If you start poorly but you end strong, at least you can say, okay, there was a lot of change, but the way it ended, maybe they've all figured it out and we're going to be better. That's the way I look at it. Like, but if you don't make the playoffs this year, it's going to be seen as a disappointment. You know, you look back, I always look at the end of the year, what I always do, Derek, is I always go back and I look, what did I think about this team at the beginning of the year and how close did it come? Did I think they were going to be good and they underachieved? Did I think they were going to be bad? Like, I look at Columbus. I did not know what to expect about Columbus this year. And I watch them and they're fighting and they're scratching and they're clawing and they're in the race. And, like, to me, that team is a success. There's no – right now, you look at Nashville and what we expected at the beginning of the year, it's a disappointment. Now, you can erase some of that. You can create optimism for next year. But it's going to be hard to, it's going to be hard to overcome what happened at the beginning of the season. It's like, you know, Derek, it's like one of my coworkers is Craig Simpson. He scored 50 goals 1 year in the NHL. He was a hell of a player. And he always says to me, beware of the team that finishes great when there's no pressure. Well, I think there is pressure on the Predators to send a notice to them, to your own fans, that what happened at the beginning of the year was bad, but it was an aberration. It was a fluke. It's not who we really are. And I think that's the message they've got to send to your fan base for the last couple months of the season.
We're talking to Elliot Freeman, 32 Thoughts, the podcast, Hockey Night in Canada. And Elliot, I'm watching the Predators morning skate right now. One thing leading into the game tonight, I was really impressed. It was the first time I had seen Macklin Celebrini in person. Yeah. And, man, he looks like the real deal. And obviously San Jose is super young. They're building around him and four or five other guys that they think will blossom. But Celebrini, I'm hearing a lot of people say that they think Celebrini's ceiling might be higher than Connor Bedard's. Do you agree?
I have heard people say that to me. Yes, I have. They think, like, I've had definitely people say they think that Celebrini is a better skater than Bedard, and that can help it. Celebrini is a pretty amazing story if you think about it. Like, his father was the director of sports science for a while for the Vancouver Canucks, and eventually with the director of sports or the vice president of sports science for the Golden State Warriors. So he's grown up in really professional environments. He really understands what it takes to be successful as an athlete. Like, there was a great story about him. He used to play in the USHL for the Chicago Steel. And one night the Golden State Warriors were in Chicago because they were going to play the Bulls the next day. And Steve Kerr told the staff and players that his son was a really good player and was going to be a high pick in the draft. So the coaching staff and Draymond Green went to go watch him play, and they were terrible that night. They lost like 10-4 or something like that. So they left early, and when he found out they left early, Celebrini say, like, I have to stay at their games when they play badly. Why couldn't they stay at mine? It was a pretty funny story. I got a good laugh out of it. But, that kid understands what it's like to be around pros and what it takes. And, I think a lot of people are down on Bedard for a little bit, and I think it's too early for that. I see the ability in Celebrini, and I see why people really like him.
Elliot, we had an interesting challenge the other night and it's the first time we had seen one. The Predators challenged successfully a puck that went over the glass. It was originally ruled as a delay of game. The score was 5-5 at the time. Nashville had made the comeback, tied it up, and they're risking going down 5-on-3 if they're not right. And they successfully got it right. But one thing that came up, I thought it was interesting, is the different buildings have different cameras. It's one that's really hard to see. And maybe a game that's on in the playoffs or national TV, it might be easier to see. But that's something that's maybe an inequity in the different buildings, different nights. But obviously that was a huge call that they got right. I understand it hasn't really been challenged very often since they put that rule in.
Yeah, you know, I think that that has been an issue in some buildings. I know they've worked hard to standardize it, but there are some ways that some of these buildings are constructed that can be a little bit different. I know also, too, like when we go into buildings sometimes, like depending on, you know, like this is a little bit of inside baseball, but, you know, also, too, like you have to set up your cameras in certain ways. Not every building is the same. Sometimes it also depends on which TV network has first right of refusal in the building, depending on if you're in the United States or Canada or in Quebec. Yes, there are some inequities, but I think it's less of an issue than it used to be. But that does happen, Willie, yes.
Fortunately, they got a good look at it. Elliot, another guy I think Predator fans would be interested to focus on tonight is Mikael Granlund, who played a great game the other night, had two goals against his former team. He was such an important player for the Predators on the John Hines teams. He's on that same contract that's expiring. I had somebody that was really has a good eye for how to build a team. He made this point about the Sharks. Granlund would be a very attractive trade piece, I would think, as a center who could do a lot of different things. But he said if he were the Sharks, he would look at really trying to sign him because you need the support for guys like Celebrini and guys like that. What do you think his trade market's like? What are the Sharks thinking there?
I think the Sharks have discussed an extension with him. As always, it's the sweet spot, right? Like, what does everybody want? And I always think that, but I know teams have kind of been around. Right now, I think it's kind of in a bit of, it might be a bit early, but I know they've discussed an extension with him. You know, I did try to ask around. Some people were being really quiet about it because I think they were legitimately talking to him. So I think my answer would say right now is I'd probably say I don't know exactly which way this is going to go. He's definitely being scouted. There's no question about that because he can score, he can create offense. But there definitely seemed to be a will on his part to stay. You know, he's bounced around a bit. Some guys don't like that anymore, Willie. I think some guys like to know where they're going to be, and I had heard he wasn't against the idea of staying there.
One last one. I know you've been covering the drama for the JT Miller situation Vancouver. And I'm sure you're probably tired of talking about it. But I think from Nashville's perspective, if there is a miracle run, or really if you're any of these teams trying to grab that last wild card, because it really does look like there's only one spot. Fair to say, Elliot, in the West, it looks like there are probably seven spots that are spoken for. That last wild card is up for grabs. You got the Flames, you've got Vancouver, and Vancouver really shouldn't be where they are. You could argue the Predators shouldn't be where they are. But the Miller trade thing is a big, big part of the plot going forward. So do you think it's almost inevitable now that they will move him?
I think they will at some point. But, like, you know, one of the things that I always say, Willie, is that when you're drowning, the other GMs, they don't throw you life preservers. They throw you anvils. And that happens now. Like, teams see that Vancouver wants to make the trade, and they're making it hard for them. The offers are not great. They're asking now. Some teams are trying to see if Vancouver will retain salary. Like, that contract's got 5 more years on it. So, you know, people challenge you. They test you. Like, they're trying to test, like, how much does Vancouver think they need to do this right now? How much desperation is there to do that? and Vancouver is wading through. Like, I think this has been a frustrating season there. It's been a lot more high maintenance than they wanted it or hoped it would be. And I think while they would like to make a move, I think, like, every team has a limit. Like, I'm not going there. And retention is one of those places that Vancouver is unwilling to go.
Elliot, before we let you go, I do have to ask you quickly about the most important story that came out of Edmonton this week. The nacho platter that landed on the ice. An impressive throw. Landed right side up.
Yes.
That's the first time, by the way, I've ever truly related to a professional athlete when Logan Thompson said he was distracted by a tray of nachos. I get it. I absolutely get it. I just wanted to throw that in there quickly. Elliot Freeman, go ahead.
I have to say, Adam, you should be thrown out of a building if you ruin a good plate of nachos.
I would agree.
Good nachos are not to be trifled with. That's how I feel about this issue.
No, I can't speak to the quality of the nachos in Edmonton, but generally speaking, I do agree with you. No one should ever waste
like they had jalapeno. It didn't look like there were jalapenos or salsa. It looked straight up like nachos and cheese, nothing else from what I could tell.
You know what? Like the topper would have been, like, if I was on the ice, if I would have scored, I would have skated over and eaten one of them. I think
Andrew Hammond back in the day with the
Hamburglar. Yes, that was one of the most disgusting things I've ever seen. I couldn't believe he ate that. Curtis Lazar.
Elliot Freeman, presented by Old National Bank. Elliot, great stuff, my friend. We'll talk next week.
All right, guys. Chat next week.
Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL insider, joining us on the program. 615-737-1025. Willie, I know that you must depart to get prepared for the Predators game tonight. Predators and Sharks Part 2. Puck drop at 9:30, pregame at 8:30, right here on 102.5, 106.3. The game will get back into the Titans and your reaction to our interview with Mike Borgonzi, Derek Mason, Willie Donick, Adam Vingan, 102.5, 106.3. The game.